Good morning, everybody. My name's Dorothy, and I am an addict. I didn't have a lot of warning about this. They asked me yesterday afternoon. I love being a fill-in. First, the topics relate to our fourth and fifth tradition. So fourth tradition is each group should be autonomous except for matters affecting other groups or NA as a whole. And I'll touch on that one first. When I first got clean, I was sitting in a meeting, and I probably had about 6 months clean. And the girl sitting next to me probably had about 7 years. You know, gods to newcomers. And the secretary was up there doing what they do, and they asked somebody to do the readings, but they didn't do them in the traditional order. You know, most meetings, you hear them in the traditional order, the order that they appear in the basic text. Well, he didn't do it that way. And she says, he's violating the traditions. He's all wrong, blah, 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 blah. And I said, wait a second. I don't know. Let me go ask some more learned people about that. And they said, go read the literature, Dorothy, and you come back and tell me what you understand about that. Wonderful sponsor. And so I did that. And nowhere in any of the literature did I find that the readings have to be in any specific order. Gee, I don't think he violated any traditions. Then I joined the home group, and I found out that it didn't say what order to read them in. It just said, you have the people read the readings. It didn't even list them on our sheet. Gee, I guess that means he gets to choose whatever order it's in. So I learned through that one experience that a group has the right to do whatever they choose. And in fact, later on I found that, you know, a lot of groups don't even read all the readings. Like, they didn't read all the readings here. We're still a group. We're still meeting for the purpose of recovery. That's what a group is. My broadened experience got a little better when I started doing a little bit of traveling and going to NA. And I had about 2 years clean, and we went to visit my family out in Oregon because my sister was getting married, and we went to some meetings there. I was used to meetings in Baltimore, you know, an hour. You were lucky if you found one that was an hour and 15 minutes. No smoke breaks, no other breaks. You just go and you're done. Well, out there, most of their meetings are an hour and a half. They have 15-minute smoke break in between. So, you know, it was a whole different atmosphere. In the meetings in Baltimore, most of the meetings you sit in rows. I was used to that, theater style, like here. Out there, most of them are sitting in circles or on the floor on beanbags. It was different. I didn't feel quite as comfortable until I'd been to a few of them because it was a different type of format. But guess what? They were still recovering. It still worked for them. Thank God that they got to do what they got to do. I know from going to school in Oregon that the atmosphere is much more laid back. We used to have a saying around the campus that I went to, old hippies don't die, they just moved to Eugene, Oregon. So it was that sort of atmosphere. And they still carried it like that. Then we went to visit my mother-in-law, and she was living down in mid-coastal California at the time, and we went to a meeting down there. And every one of their meetings, they'd have a 15-minute business meeting at the opening of their meeting. Now, if you didn't want to attend that, you waited, and you showed up 15 minutes later. I didn't know that was their policy in that area, but it was, and all their meetings are formatted that way. Guess what? That's their choice. And if you only want the recovery part and you don't want the business part, show up 15 minutes late. Okay, that works for them. Not for me, not my choice. I don't want to be forced to sit through a business meeting if I don't belong to that home group or that area or don't know anything. But guess what? They still recover. And that's the whole point, is we get to choose what works for us in our home groups. Also, when I first got clean, my life was a little more chaotic. I was not as centered. My husband was still relapsing. Life was just all drama. So I tended to levitate to those meetings. It tended to be more drama. You know, where the people were talking in the back and getting all wild, and the speaker was up there slamming things down, and you were like, yeah. Kept my attention and kept me awake. And as my recovery progressed, I like those more subtle and subdued meetings, you know, where people come in, they give hugs, they talk to people, and then you sit down, you listen to a person share their experience, strength, and hope, and then people share from the floor, and we close, and there's no chaos and drama, and you don't have to worry about there's a fight going on out in the street because somebody said something that somebody didn't like. But, you know, each person has to develop in their own way. And I know for me in the beginning, I needed that meeting that was autonomous in the way they did things. And they had a little more drama than some of the others. So the nice thing about that is it doesn't give you free rein to just do anything, though. When I got involved with service in Baltimore area, and I was a DSR for District 5 back when we still had districts, we had a bunch of meetings that were forced to close within about a two-month period. And they were all in the same general part of the city. And we had to look at what kind of behavior was causing so many of our home groups to have to close. And it was because that home group was allowing people to sell stuff in the back of the meeting and allow the trunk in the car and blocking the street during the rush hour where it says no parking or stopping because they've got the trunk open, they're selling, and the members were standing out in the street smoking cigarettes after the meeting. So the place got condemned and closed and, you know, the meeting had to move. Those people working on their recovery at their own pace moved to some other meetings, and they carried that behavior with them. And until somebody was willing in that home group to pull them up and say, this isn't acceptable at our home group, we had more meetings close. When I allow people to come to my home group and disrupt the atmosphere in the neighborhood, I risk my home group closing. It risks every NA group in that area closing. Also, when I first got clean, I needed a lot of recovery. My husband was, like I said, was still going out. So we were also looking to move. And this place where there was like four or five meetings a day, every day of the week, which was really convenient, had this townhouse part on the end that was for rent. So we rented that. So I was right next door. It was the best thing. And about a year into it, the one home group that met at 6 p.m. and then 9 p.m. on Saturday, well, they decided that they were going to start having marathons. Now, this wasn't a huge space, and their crowd was way over capacity and way past fire code. And they didn't monitor where the people parked like the other meetings. The other meetings in that location, as part of their readings, would say, you know, please don't block the driveways. Please don't double park in the parking lot. You know, you can park around the corner or up the street. But, you know, be respectful of the neighborhood. Well, this group didn't. And they started having these marathons that were going till midnight. And the people were blocking the neighbors' cars and yelling out in the street and saying, all you... every four-letter word you can possibly think of. And the neighbors started calling the police. And they called the police a lot. And I'd go out there, and I'd go out and say, you need to take that someplace else. You need to go move your car. And I get, who the bleep do you think you are? And I go, I'm a member of this fellowship, and I'm a member of this neighborhood, and I'm a member of this community, and if you want these meetings to stay here, you need to change your behavior. Because the behavior that that group was allowing was affecting the other groups. I ended up renting to own a house about a mile away from there. And when I did that, it wasn't 2 months later that meeting place had to close. The police and the community got a court order to evict them because of their poor behavior. That one group affected two midnight meetings. Their meeting that met 7 days a week at 6 p.m. and 9 p.m. on Saturday, a meeting that met 5 days a week at 9 p.m., a meeting that met at noon 7 days a week, a meeting at 7 a.m. 5 days a week, and a meeting at 10 a.m. 2 days a week, all gone because one group couldn't respect the neighborhood that Narcotics Anonymous was in. When you allow your group's behavior to affect how the perception in the community sees you, you're affecting NA as a whole. Our groups are not autonomous in that way. Our behavior, when we step out in that street, when we leave a meeting place, when we wear an NA t-shirt, when we're riding on the bus, our behavior, my behavior, affects what people think Narcotics Anonymous is. And I know if I'm acting all crazy wild and I don't give a dang about you or anybody else, they're not going to give a dang about me, and they're going to say, please don't get those addicts here. I also have one other tradition that they've asked me to speak on, and that is tradition 5. Each group has but one primary purpose, to carry the message to the addict who still suffers. Like I said, when I was new, I liked those really rowdy meetings, but I needed a couple of those really serene, caring meetings at the very beginning. I told you my husband had a problem, and he had a problem staying clean, and he had a problem staying clean for about 3.5 years of my recovery. And it was a constant struggle for me to decide to stick and stay every time he went out, because I wanted to go save him. And I sent him off to treatment through his job and treatment here. And one of those treatments, they had a family program with. And I went there and I filled out their wonderful questionnaire thinking that I didn't have any kind of problem. No problem at all. You know, I'd stop drinking. I'd stop this all on my own many years ago. I just had to tell some lies, and as soon as nobody knew those lies, well, I started right back up. But I can control it, right? So I'm coming to Narcotics Anonymous because, you know, he went to those treatments and he took the car and he didn't come back, and I couldn't get to work, and I wasn't going to let him go by himself anymore. And I start coming in here and I start sitting and listening and thinking that, yeah, maybe some of those things that we read in our readings, it could relate to me. But just because I was willing to, like, talk to him about it wasn't meaning that I was yet willing to admit it openly or in public. And because I was sitting there in meetings with him, I'm grateful that there are open meetings, because open meetings allow people that aren't sure if they're addicts to get there, hear the message, and get to figure it out for themselves. I got to figure out that maybe some of my behaviors, you know, like going to the doctors 3 times a week to get a prescription that I really wanted, maybe was a problem. Maybe having a party, and if there was like a half a gallon bottle of a whatever left over, I was drinking it till it was gone. Maybe that was a problem. I had to look at these things, but I wasn't ready to look at them right away. So I'm grateful that we have the choice to have open and closed meetings. Because there's times today that I want to discuss things that I don't want people coming in off the street that might take it back to my job, that don't understand our steps and traditions, to take back to my job and say, did you know? But I needed that open meeting so I could feel comfortable with the fact of things that people had been telling me for years and years, that maybe, just maybe, some of my behavior wasn't quite right. Also, I needed that loving and caring meeting, because one night I was supposed to meet him there because he was supposed to ride the bus up from a friend's house, and he never showed up. And I was sitting in that meeting, and I was about ready to burst out in tears, and I just didn't know what to do yet. And the meeting was one of those fun kind of meetings. And the secretary was one of those fun kind of secretaries. And when they got up to do the key tags at the end, he did it the old-fashioned way. I don't hear it very much anymore, where, you know, the orange ones, aren't you glad you got here? And green, go like to another meeting. You know, the fun stuff. And all of a sudden, I realized that I hadn't used anything sitting taking him to meetings, because, you know, I didn't want him to risk taking something at home. I hadn't used anything for 108 days. And so I got my first key tag. It was a 90-day key tag. But that's when I first belonged to Narcotics Anonymous. I'm grateful that you could have fun meetings like that. And that jovial attitude that night when I was just so down let me open up and say, yeah, maybe today, maybe now I have a problem. But I also needed those meetings that had the chaos, because, you know, life was chaotic and I couldn't relate to anything calm anymore. I had no serenity and no peace. And so those peaceful meetings that were always there, they just weren't right. So I needed that variety. I liked to hear the war stories, even though I couldn't relate to necessarily the ones on the street, but I pulled it into what I did. the speakers when they talk about running down the street and tricking. I was like, well, you know what? You let a guy fill you up for a hit of pot. Maybe. Maybe it relates. And so I needed that so I wouldn't go to that next step. Today, I like other kinds of meetings. I like meetings where the speaker talks about, you know, how they're dealing with life and their job and their kids, and they're staying clean through it. I don't need quite so much war story anymore. I understand that I don't have to go to the same bottom that somebody else does, and I really don't need the experience of listening to it every single time. But that's just for me, and I'm lucky that there's all those meetings out there. I'm also grateful that there's things like step and tradition meetings, so I got some experience and some understanding from members that I wouldn't have normally talked to about these wonderful things that help keep our fellowship free and alive. I'm grateful for those meetings that show me what not to do, too. So I can go back to my home group and say, you know what? I saw this someplace else, and so-and-so said they might like to try it, but it just wasn't working well. And we've discussed things like that. So these traditions that allow us to find places to meet freely, meet in ways that touch everybody, that's what keeps a fellowship alive. And my home group today, we try to be very cognizant when a newcomer comes in. I'm almost always there an hour before the meeting. The coffee pot takes a really long time to heat up. And I don't want it not to be ready when somebody gets there, because then we have problems. And if somebody wanders in that I haven't seen at the meeting before, I always ask him, are you new, or have you been to meetings before? They go, well, I was going to the 9, or I just got out of treatment, or that. And I grab our schedule, and Baltimore's schedule's pretty big. It's one of the largest, because Baltimore area schedule is the Free State Regional schedule, and we have over 700 meetings a week in it, so it's pretty big. And it can be overwhelming and hard to understand, and our region's been looking at trying to revamp it to make it easier to find meetings in, because if you come into an area and you don't know that Northeast Freedom area and Baltimore area sort of co-overlap in a lot, like half the city, you won't know that you can look in both sections. And if you don't know that, you know, Susquehanna area is all of Hartford and Cecil County, you don't really know where you're at. And unless you know the cities and the towns and the zip codes, especially in big cities like Baltimore, if you don't know the zip code, you don't know if that meeting's around the corner, cross town, or where. And when I first got clean, I said we had districts, and the Baltimore area was broke up into districts. So if you didn't know what district you belonged to, it was really hard to find a meeting, because you'd look in Baltimore, and then you'd have to look in this section. And if those didn't look like the streets you knew, well, you'd look in the next section, and if you're new to town, forget it. Forget it. So part of the way we make things easier for our membership to find meetings is I go through with a yellow highlighter, and I highlight all the meetings that are in and around my area. I go, if you can find here, here's all the meetings here in this building, and here's a meeting that's 2 blocks down at 7 a.m., and there's another meeting that's up the street on Thursdays, and if you go up just past this other road at the other church right across from the other CVS, there's these meetings here, and there's a one next to the credit union, and I'm sitting there giving them directions, and I've been in meetings like 5 years later where the person comes in and goes, you know what, I didn't get clean that time, or I didn't stay clean that time, but I came back because I knew where to come back to because of that schedule you gave me. All those highlighted meetings, it helps so much. Or they come in and tell me, you know what? I got 5 years clean, and the only reason I could was I made it to all those meetings. You touched me in a way. I know that when I was new and I sat there for those first 108 days, most people didn't say anything to me. I didn't want to be the one that lets the newcomer slip out the door. I also have a responsibility in my home group to keep the meeting conducive to recovery. And in my area, we had this young gentleman. He was probably about 20 at the time. And he'd suffered a traumatic brain injury as a small child. And his brother had gotten a court slip and sent him to get it filled out for him. And he found out that girls would hug him in Narcotics Anonymous. He had the mentality of a six-year-old and the hormones of a teenager and didn't understand. Our meeting had to be very careful in how we handled that situation, because he would go up to girls and want to put his head on their chest. I got a phone call from a recovery center where a girl was walking back from my home group that I was part of, and he'd seen her, and she talked to him, and he thought she was nice, and so he tried to pull her into the alley to give her some kisses. She was a rape victim. It didn't go over very well. We had to sit down and have a very long talk with this young man and explain that that's just not appropriate behavior. There's not too many people that when he sees, he is totally respectful. I'm one of the very few, because I was the one that had that responsibility because of my position in my home group to address it with him. We're responsible for our meetings. We're responsible for ourselves. We're responsible for making sure that meeting's conducive to recovery. For the newcomer who doesn't know what Narcotics Anonymous is, for the person who's been raped that feels like they're violated when they walk into our meetings, we're responsible for making sure our meetings are safe and that we can recover. And if we continue to do the next right thing, and we pray when we have our group consciences and make our home groups a safe and serene place, our fellowship will continue to grow, strive, and we'll all survive. Thanks for letting me share.
Thank you. Okay, and for our second speaker, we have Charles W. from the Southern Potomac area.
Hi, I'm Ag, and my name's Charles.
Thank you, Charles.
And it's always an honor to come out and to be asked to come out and share your experience, strength, and hope in this fellowship. So when I was asked to come to do another tradition, I was like, wow. You know, so I'm glad there's so many people here. This is a large group for tradition. It's a large group. But until I got involved with service, I didn't really understand how important the traditions are. Once we get involved with service, then we'll learn these things, because we're going to be interacting, we're going to be doing things. Most of the people, they just come to the meeting, they know us there, they sit down, they drink their coffee and tea, and they might get a few numbers, and they stay clean for that day, and they don't really care what all is involved with that group or what's going on. Because what was your name?
Dorothy.
Dorothy was talking about the coffee. See, in my group, coffee is important. Coffee is important. I mean, our group meets at 8 o'clock, but we're there at 7. The water's on, the chairs are set up, everything's ready. When the people come, it's got to be coffee. You know, we interview. We try to give it to a newcomer, the coffee maker, but that's an important position. Do you drink coffee? If you don't drink coffee, you don't need to be making our coffee. You know, that kind of thing, you know. But, you know, each group is a time. I'm going to touch on the fourth tradition first. You know, each group is autonomous, except in matters affecting other groups or NA as a whole. You know, so like Dorothy was saying, in your area, you're accustomed to a certain weight. I mean, you know, like they're going to be doing it a certain way. When you go someplace else, it feels funny. Feels funny. Be like they're doing something wrong. You know, in my early recovery, My sponsor used to get me and be like, look, we need to go out to this meeting and straighten it out because they're not right, you know. And I would go out with them, you know, just to see what's going on. And it's like, you know, there's nothing wrong with this meeting. But they're not. If you become so accustomed to a certain thing, you know, you believe that that's the only way it's supposed to go. But each group is autonomous. I mean, they might not want to read everything. They might want to have. I've been to meetings where the time limit is funny. I mean, you know, it's like 40-minute meetings. I mean, just whatever works for that place. You know, they have reasons for doing those things. You know, and so I go. I've been able to go to different meetings too. I've gone to places where they just read some of the literature. You know, like they might read the tradition of the month. They don't even read anything else. That when they get finished, they read the tradition. If this the second month, they just read the second tradition. That's it. And you know, they have the right to do that. Some people pray different. Some people, you know, like do those things, but. All, none of these things are going to affect NA as a whole, you know. None of those things. When I first came in, my clean date is May 5th, 1980. So in my area, when I got clean, we had no literature. No literature at all, you know. It was three meetings, you know. So when I was involved in service right away, you know, and I started... getting exposed to the traditions and everything. Now, I didn't really understand what this tradition mean. Each group is autonomous. But what I understood, see, I was straight off the street. So, I wanted to do some street things. So I wanted to bring some street stuff into the NA meeting. Now, I thought it was something that y'all would really enjoy because I was going to hook it up, you know. Like wet T-shirt meetings in the summertime, you know. That kind of thing, you know. Now, that kind of stuff will affect NA as a whole, you know. So I began to learn. But, I mean, you know, I was learning because I'm, like I say, most of us, we come in just who we are, you know, and we just want to set it up like that. I wanted to bring the streets right into the meeting. And I began to learn that we could do, you know, like we could do just about anything we want in our meetings, but we can't do everything. We can't do everything we want to do because everything is, I mean, some things are going to affect NA as a whole, like Dorothy was talking about. If we can't control our meeting place, if we can't govern our meeting place, then we're not going to have it. If the place in my home group, you know, they, you know, you can't park in the fire lane, period. They can. You know, people who let us use that building, they, you know, they can park there, but we can't. You know, so we announced that. You know, and if we see anybody there during the meeting, we'll even stop and say somebody's parked in the fire lane because we want to keep our meeting place. in the D.C. area, we had a lot of meetings in one facility. Whenever you have a lot of meetings in one facility, then you're at risk anyway. You know, because all it takes is one weak group to mess it up for everybody else. Because if we have another group in our building, we're not responsible for that. You know, that group have to be responsible for that. We can't come there during their meeting and say, look, y'all can't do this and can't do that. You know, and we put ourselves at risk. You know, the way to do that for me would be to join that group and try to, you know, offer some structure to that group. Or In the case of our meeting, we just try to respect our meeting place, try to keep everything going nice and smooth. If we have any problems with that, anything, you know, we try to take care of it. If locks are broke, you know, we're paid to fix them. We just get that stuff fixed. Because, you know, like, we're the addicts. We're the ones in the group. And the church... if they break a lock, we're going to get blamed anyway. You know, so if something breaks, we just fix it. You know, and that way, you know, like you develop a relationship with the meeting place, you know, they expect that kind of behavior out of us. You know, and everything goes well as long as we, you know, like deal with it like that. But I've gone out of town and I've gone to meetings where, you know, after they do a few readings, they may take a moment of silence. The speaker would share, and then say, "We'll open up the meeting." And then it'd be a dead silence. Nobody share. And the speaker don't say, "Well, okay, I'm going to call on somebody." No, they just stand there, or they'll just drop their head, and they won't say nothing until somebody wants to share. And that was a great experience for me. I was like, it was like meditation. Because I didn't want to share either. You know, so I just sit there, you know. And I didn't have to worry about nobody pointing at me. "Well, we're going to hear from you," you know. And that was a great meeting. I mean, we was able to go to meetings every day, or pretty much every day while we were out of town. And I enjoyed that. But that's the way that group went. I don't necessarily like some of the stuff that goes on in my home group, but that's just the way it is, you know. Like, we can vote on stuff, you know, and I can deal with it in the group conscience. If we as a group can't deal with those kind of things that I think is a problem, it must not be a problem for the group, you know. Maybe it's a problem with me, you know. So, but the fourth tradition is important. Now, the fifth tradition is our primary purpose, you know. And the primary purpose of the group is just to provide an atmosphere of recovery for the suffering addicts. And both of these, let me just say that if we were to do anything other than provide an atmosphere of recovery for the suffering addicts, you know, we would be doing a lot of things in NA, because, I mean, there's as many ideas in this room right now as there are people in this room. And, you know, like, with strong personality and stuff, you know, like, we might decide as a group that we want to do some things that will take up all our time and our resources, and we'll forget what the primary purpose is. That there'll be a new person come in that room and be lost, because we'll be so caught up in our next adventure till we really don't have time to help the newcomer. That's why, you know, like, the primary, we got to keep focused on the primary purpose. The only reason I'm here is because, you know, I don't want to use. And if I stay clean, you know, I can get some fresh new ideas and I can put that stuff to work on my own, but I don't need to be in NA trying to grow my business. You know, and I heard Dorothy talking about that, and groups falling because of, you know, everybody's private enterprise, you know, that in order to go to a meeting, I got to buy 2 T-shirts and some earrings, you know, to get to a meeting, you know. And then, you know, like, I don't have a place to park because, you know, everybody's standing in the parking spaces trying to see what's for sale. You know, and the groups can handle that kind of stuff. I mean, you know, because we can make you feel bad enough that you don't want to be there. You know what I'm saying? And we could talk about that could be the topic for the day. You know, I mean, you know, what are you really here for? You know, and we could share about that in our meetings, because the sixth tradition's always been, I'm getting ready to get off, let me go back to fifth, but the sixth tradition's always been my pet peeve, you know, because we come in here, you know, and the fellowship gives us life and gives us ideas and stuff, and everybody's got an enterprise and everybody's got their own way of doing some things, you know, but that's not what we're here for, you know, because if I use, I mean, all those good ideas going out the window anyway. If I can't get the next person behind me to stay clean, who am I going to look for to when I need some help? Because that information that I share with him or her, you know, next year they'd be saying, "Well, all you got to do is what you told me to do." And then I say, "What was that? What was it? You need to tell me, you know, because I'm the one that's suffering. You know, I can help everybody in this room, but I still can't help myself." You know, so I mean, if I'm spending so much time trying to do anything other than you know, like protect our meeting space, protect this fellowship so that I can continue to live, keep the atmosphere of recovery so the fellowship keeps growing and my group keeps getting strong in numbers. You know, if I can't do that, then I'm setting myself up. But I've enjoyed the entire ride. I came in, I got involved with H&I because in my early recovery, it was time for me to go back to jail. And I told my sponsor, I said that, you know, like, you know, I'm going to have to leave y'all. Because I got locked up every 4 years. I mean, couldn't be no more than that. So after about 4 years, I hadn't done nothing. But I felt like it was time to go to jail. You know, so it was getting close to that time. And I told, but I got a letter. I got a certified letter in the mail. And I freaked out. You know, I called my sponsor. I said, you know, they found me. I said, I'm gonna have to go. He said, what are you talking about? I said, they know where I'm at. You know, they're gonna lock me up. He said, what are you talking about? I said, they know where I'm at. They sent me the letter. He said, what letter? I said, I got the letter in the mail, a certified letter. He said, what did it say? I said, I don't know. I ain't go down there and get it. He said, go down there and get it. You read it. And then you talk to me. We talk, find out what it is. What it wasn't nothing, but I was so worried about going to jail. He said, okay, look, you so worried about going to jail, we need to get you in there now so you can come home the same day. And I began to deal with H&I. I started going in and out of the institutions. And that's, you know, like when I was always involved with service, you know, because I came in at such an early, I mean, it just wasn't a whole lot of NA groups, so seemed like everybody was in service. And I thought that's how it go. I thought everybody was supposed to be in service until the fellowship started growing and some people just didn't do nothing. But I thought everybody was in service. And that's when I began to learn about the traditions and how important they are. That if it wasn't for the traditions, that we could lose everything that we worked for. We can lose it, I mean, and then we would all be suffering all over again. And something simple like, see, we borrowed this program from Alcoholics Anonymous, you know. So most of the stuff that we would have to go through has already been proven out for us. I mean, we don't even have to go through that. But even bad experiences in this fellowship are opportunities for growth for us, you know. Like we share that good experience, and we share that bad experience that we had with other groups and other members, and they don't have to go through that stuff. The fellowship grows as a result of, you know, us sharing that information. And it's sad. It's sad when, you know, you have one facility go down and you got so many groups in that facility, and then all of a sudden they start scattering, trying to, you know, like, you know, just pull the pieces together when it could have been taken care of from the beginning, you know. So if you don't have a group that you're willing to, you know, like put it all on the line for, you need to find another group. You know, I mean, because people come to our group all the time and they want to change our group. They're not even members. We even have some people that would join our group just so they can change it. You know, but we just tell them, I mean, you know, because we got to hear it out because we don't know what's coming until it comes. And we let them know. The group that you came from is no longer in existence. There's a reason for that. Yeah. There's a reason for that. Now, if you like this group so much, why is the first thing that you want to do is change it when you get here? If you really like what you found when you got here, why do you want to change so much so soon? We got strong members in our group, you know, and so we put our foot down. It's like a lot of stuff that's just, it's just not going to happen, you know. I mean, because, if there's a reason to change, because we have a strong group, and we have a group inventory. We do that, and we take our group inventory. We try to improve on it. We try to do the things. Are we really hugging the newcomers? Are we really recognizing, you know, like what's going on with our... Are we being too disruptive? I'm talking about us. I'm not talking about the newcomers. Are we being so disrupted? You know, people are looking at us, you know, and we don't know how much they're looking at us 2 years later. Then they come up to you and be like, "Mom, you know, when you did this or when you, I mean, you know, like, be telling us all the stuff." We're like, "I don't remember that stuff." But it affected somebody. You know, our behavior affected other people. They looked up at us. And if they see us cutting up and acting crazy, you know, it'd be like, "Well, this is what we were doing. This is what I was doing in the street." You know, so, you know, like, we try, because it's not easy. You know, especially when you become a big group and you start attracting a lot of people, and, you know, and then you got all these strong personalities and these fabulous members, and, you know, we got a lot of stuff going on, you know. Got a lot of stuff going on. I'm not talking about my daughter. She is fabulous. But I'm talking about, you know, these personalities, you know, where we want to be so creative. You know, like I said, you know, when I came in, I wanted a wet T-shirt meet because they didn't have air conditioning. And I thought it would have been nice. You know, I thought y'all may like it too. You know, but we don't have to go through that kind of stuff no more because, you know, the fellowship has just grown so much. Can you imagine coming in and you see somebody, the person with the most amount of time has got 6 months, that's me, and I just got out of treatment? I'm the role model. You know, so, I mean, you know, it is truly through the grace of God that the fellowship was able to even take roots and grow. Because I was able to, in that state, I was still able to help other people until I was able to get myself together. Now, I don't have to go through that stuff no more because I've grown up in this program. I've grown up here as a result of making my mistakes, going through some stuff, and I wanted to help y'all because there wasn't nothing wrong with me. My sponsor told me that if I want to help somebody, I needed to work the steps, you know, because that's what the program is. If I'm going to help you, then I got to be able to walk you through the steps. So I started working the steps so I can help y'all. And as a result of doing that, I got better, you know. So a whole lot of things that were blessings in my life was because of my desire to help y'all. Because I really didn't think I was that bad. So I can almost identify with that, you know, unique, you know, that unique, you know, I was unique, you know. But even being unique in this program, you can grow up, get the help you need, you know, and address those things. But if we let our primary purpose slip to the side, that's gone. Okay, I'm going to share this one incident before I close. We had the in D.C. earlier, we had the World Convention. And we raised a lot of money. All our bills were paid way before the convention even took off. You know, we ended up with $80,000 after all the bills were paid, and that money was in our area. For 6 months or more, all we could talk about in area service was, what are we going to do with the money? You know, and so we didn't get any business. Now, all old business became very old business. So every month, it just kept on old business. We never got to the old business because we were still dealing with this business. You know, you got $80,000 in the home group, we can't even spend $80,000. You know, we can't even decide what to do with $80, so $80,000 was a problem. We wanted to buy a club. We need an NA club, and y'all ain't got nothing to do with that because we got the money. We're going to get this club. You know, it was just a lot of stuff that NA as a whole was going to suffer with because we were going to have to pay for that club. We may have been able to get it, but it wasn't going to be paid for, you know. So now, you know, like the primary purpose probably wasn't going to be the primary purpose. You know, the newcomer sitting there, you know, like looking for some help. And we over here talking about how are we going to get this mortgage for next month. You know, we're going to have to sell hot dogs in the meetings now. I mean, it was becoming a big problem. And we was getting away from the primary purpose. The primary purpose is not to own property. Now, I can do that on my own. If I want to buy a building for NA, I can buy that and, you know, and then offer it out to the fellowship. I can do that on my own. We don't need to come together to do that. You know, but, you know, this is what you know, all that ambition did for us when we had some money, you know, and it became a problem. It became a problem for the whole area because we, you know, we never took care of any business. There are people here that know what I'm talking about. You know, we was there and it was like, it was crazy. I mean, at the end of the meeting, we hadn't took care of nothing. So we gave the money to the world. And once we did that, it was like, man, it was like a relief, you know. We could go on with our life. Our life became simplistic again. All of a sudden, we could help the newcomers. We could focus on the primary purpose. You know, I mean, the simplicity of this program, you know, that's why we got to keep the primary purpose, the primary purpose. That's just to provide an atmosphere of recovery. And any two or three people meeting at the same place at the same time for the purpose of recovery is an NA group. You know, it doesn't have to be a large group. You know, so, I mean, we got people that have problems. We're going to have people that have problems with anything that goes on in this fellowship. You know, if you got a group that's only three or four people and they're not reading all the literature, that's a problem for somebody. That's a problem for somebody. That is not an NA meeting in somebody's mind, you know. But until we become informed members, you know, like we're gonna have all those problems and all those prejudices. That's why, you know, like it was told to me, you know, become an informed member. You know, if you don't know, find out. Read the literature; it's in there. And I when we was voting on the car this year, it was a lot of issues that came up this year where they want to create new literature. You know, like for how to put on conventions and stuff like that, because we're fortunate in our area, we got that information that we passed down from, you know, like committee to committee, you know, so it's not a problem. But there are other areas, young areas, who without the literature won't know how to do it, you know. So we're trying to formulate our literature so that we can have, you know, so we can have all this stuff available that if somebody want to be informed, they can read it. And they don't have to just listen to me because, you know, I can still confuse you. I know because I confuse myself, you know. So, I mean, you know, if you just depending on what I say, we still in trouble. You know, I can help you off. You know, I can point you in the right direction. I can't give you everything you need, you know. And as long as we got a place where we can come and everything is still structured and, you know, we got each other, we got a chance, you know. But did I run out of time? We still have?
You still have 3 minutes.
I still have 3 minutes. Well, I'm going to pass on the 3 minutes. And I want to thank so many people for coming out. And thanks for allowing me to share.
Thank you.
3 minutes.
Yeah.